I don't understand why this isn't a bigger story. It should be. Tell me we're not desensitized to this. We talked yesterday multiple times about the three-year-old boy who had been shot and killed. And Susie and the news team were working on the story, and then late yesterday, information came out. A close relative on Tuesday identified the three-year-old boy who was fatally shot this weekend in the family's northeast Minneapolis apartment. Juwan Robinson was critically wounded. Woods said, this is his aunt, said police have told the family that Juwan got a hold of a gun and it went off. The aunt, Misha Woods. Someone left a loaded gun in the home. He got a hold of it thinking it was a toy. She is talking about her nephew who went by Junior. He's three. He's gone. He's gone. He loved trucks and dinosaurs. He was just so silly and goofy. He was a mama's boy. Top of the head. Rush to HCMC. Police spokesman said Tuesday evening there had been no arrests and no update to share in the active and ongoing investigation. God, it just breaks your heart. About 200 minors have picked up a firearm and accidentally shot themselves or someone else in the U.S. this year, resulting in 74 deaths and 128 injuries. We last year had a Democrat and a Republican on. And it was a good back and forth over, I think, back-to-back days, if I remember right, about gun storage laws in Minnesota, what's on the books, and what should be changed. I'm not for one second coming for your gun. When we talked about this, Dave, I thought both sides made their case very well. And I thought a number of our texters and callers were very good in this. And I so appreciate it. I so appreciate another nonsense like Golden Valley and St. Louis Park. And I mean it on gravely serious stories like this. If Dave Harrigan wants to have a gun and he goes through a background check and he passes it, he should have a gun. If he wants to have it for hunting, if he wants to have it for shooting, if he wants to have it to protect his family, whatever the reason. Then the debate becomes, Dave, where is said gun? Because if, God forbid, part of the reason why you're having a gun is to protect yourself, and now the God forbid part, someone breaks in. Someone breaks in. And for some, the point is, if I have to lock up my gun and one person comes in, two individuals come in, do I have enough time to get this weapon, if necessary, to use it and stop this intruder or those intruders? Then you have the other side of the argument where, again, I'm not going to talk in the specifics about this one because we don't know. But we do know other cases, right? We know other cases where in a drawer, on a bed, in between the pillows. And by the way, the individuals who should be most outraged about this are legal, law-abiding gun owners. So what should the policy be? Last year, passed in the House, did not become law. Senate didn't pass it. Walz would have passed it, but it didn't get to his desk. 11 hours of debate last year. New bill would make it a crime to store, keep, or leave firearm in any place unless the firearm is unloaded and equipped with a locking device or locked in a firearm storage lock gun room. Currently, under Minnesota law, it's a gross misdemeanor to store or leave a loaded firearm where the person knows or should know the child is likely to gain access unless the person takes reasonable action. The bill deletes the reasonable action standard, replacing the language with specific language. If you have kids around, and again, I'm not talking directly about this case. I am saddened by this case, and it has kickstarted this conversation. But on the specifics of this case, I don't know. I just know a three-year-old is gone. You have kids around. You cannot have the weapon just laying around with confusion with a toy. How difficult is this part of the conversation? Now, again, going back to the other side. Dave, if you believe you and your family, for whatever reason, are safer because you have a gun, you have that right. People aren't just going to walk around with it in the holster. And for the folks who say, now, wait a second, if someone does break into my house or my office or wherever it might be, and I have to go so far to find the storage area and the combo, I don't have a chance. What do you say about this debate?
I think one side is losing it, and that's the side of, well, what if somebody breaks into my house? It could happen. For the vast majority of this, it is such a small chance. A minuscule chance that somebody randomly is going to break into our house out of the blue and want to kill us. It's not a common occurrence.
Neither is a gun is left laying there.
No.
And a child is shot.
It's not.
That's even less of an occurrence.
It's happened a couple hundred times in the country already this year.
Yeah. That's, well, there's been way more break-ins than
yes.
a couple hundred.
Yes, right? There's been break-ins. My point is, we're looking at a problem of children finding loaded, available guns. And, you know,
horrifying.
I've said before.
Irresponsible.
This country.
Dangerous.
Yes, absolutely.
All criminal.
Of those things. Oh, keep going. Keep
yeah.
going. I've said before, I think this country, you know, every time we get a mass shooting, we get, well, you know, assault weapons, you know, the AG, you know, whatever, the AR-15s, they got to go. Well, why don't we talk about handguns in this country? Because those are the guns that pretty much all these cases of a toddler picking up a weapon,
yeah,
they're talking about a handgun that is loaded, that is sitting on a nightstand, on a coffee table, something like that. And we, you know, these are obviously horrifically dangerous weapons in the hands of a toddler.
So many more crimes in populated areas are from handguns. They are from assault rifles.
Yes.
Shotguns.
And a child doesn't know what they're doing. They don't understand the power of the gun, or they might think it's a toy that they are holding. An adult should. There's no reason an adult doesn't. And too many adults don't give a damn. They just don't care about the power that these weapons can have in their hands, in the hands of somebody that shouldn't have it, you know, a toddler or, you know, somebody older, an adult that should not have that weapon. And I don't understand why, as a country, we just don't say, look, we have to be better. And if we can't be better, then we need to take action.
So I'm going to say this for the third time, because I do not want people to say, I know the details on this case. I don't. Okay. I want to hear from people, because the number one responsibility you have as a parent, the number one responsibility as a guardian, is to keep your children safe. That's it. That's it. That's number one on the list. And if you're so derelict that you're leaving a weapon around, you are failing as a parent. The other side could come back and say, oh, by the way, you're telling me I need to keep my kids safe. I think by having a weapon at my house and its availability is another way to keep my kids safe. What do you want to say on the balance of this? Because you see it today or you see it another time, and if there are details behind it and it was left pillowcase, bad. I think the person should go away for 30 years. And again, we have this debate, well, can you really punish the person, the parent, even more? Probably not. But the derelict of responsibility was so egregious that punishment should be in play. What do you want to say about this? I know we've had some calls, but we've been talking. You want to chime in through a phone call or a text? I would love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. Our friend Lindsey Gentzel is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Lindsey's talked about ADHD. She's had podcasts on ADHD. It affects, well, when you consider family members and friends and coworkers, it borderline affects everybody in this country. ADHD. October's ADHD Awareness Month. So Gensel's with us in about 15, but I love your phone calls on this topic, this very serious topic. 651-461-9226. A reminder, if Johnny Carson was alive, he would be 99 today. And so Dave found music from Johnny. This is Johnny also. Do you know what year this is for Mr. Cash?
I'd have to look that up. I don't know. It was during the time that Johnny Carson was hosting The Tonight Show. I'll give you that.
Okay, that really narrows it down for us. All right, we're talking about children, access to guns, tragedies, the numbers going up. Seems awful. A bill that passed the House did not pass the Senate. That included Democrats who weren't for it, by the way. And it was a broader bill, so it wasn't just this. But where is the balance? Because some people will say, and they're not condoning just leaving the gun laying right there. But they're saying if you really want to protect yourself, that some of these measures to protect the gun go so far, you're borderline eliminating the power you have to potentially alter in a most dramatic way the conditions that may be taking place.
And part of the arguments, too, were, for instance, in rural Minnesota, in farms, protecting your cows, your sheep, whatever you have out there from other animals that are trying to get them.
Among the texts coming in, well, let's take a call first. Lisa, thanks for listening. Go ahead. You're on WCCO Radio. Hello, Lisa. All right, we're going to put Lisa on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Lisa. You're on.
Okay. So, I don't own a gun. I used to. I grew up way up north where guns were in your cars all the time. But I don't own a gun anymore. I thought about that if someone were to break in. And I thought, there's other ways to protect yourself. And I thought, I'm going to use my fire extinguisher. That would be a good protection, I think. And it would
if they stayed, 15, 20 yards away? Probably not.
Yeah, I don't know. But I just feel like guns are just too free. It's not fair to those children that they have to deal with this.
No.
And then they die. Yeah.
Well, Lisa, let me ask you this. Do we make a law that goes too far? And if you believe it goes too far, and some do, some don't, should we make a law where the irresponsible gun owners won't even pay a damn thing to it, and it could potentially punish those responsible gun owners?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate the phone call. Dave, what about that? Because one of the texters is raising it. I think it's a very good point, right? If a law passes on greater security, greater punishment, safes, can't have it loaded, whatever it might be. The individuals involved in the cases which have happened before, again, we don't know the details here. Would they have even changed their approach? Or were they so irresponsible they wouldn't have cared? They would have said, I'll be fine. Or they wouldn't even have known the law, or the change in the law wouldn't have done a damn thing.
Yeah, I'd assume the majority would just be as, you know, irresponsible as they were beforehand. But you know what? Maybe not all. Maybe 3 out of 10 say, you know what, this is the law. I guess this is what I have to do now. And you know, I don't look at it as punishing the gun owners who are doing things the right way. Perhaps I get if you do look at it that way. I look at more of we're not so much punishing. We're doing something to protect the innocent, protect the kids, protect you know, protect everyone else from a gun getting in somebody's hand that it shouldn't be in.
How long does it take to snap a magazine into a gun or load a couple of bullets? A law to require the gun not to be loaded at home would be simple and certainly reduce tragic deaths. It's a text, plenty of text coming in at 651-461-9226. Thanks for not bashing gun owners. I don't do that. There needs to be consequences for sloppy gun ownership. I'm okay taking rights away from those who don't respect the rule. I'm also willing to say that any adjustments or changes of law doesn't mean you're taking away the Second Amendment. Because that argument is nonsense also. When people say, we can't touch it. We can't do anything. Sure, in the late 1700s, the forefathers had the foresight to predict everything that was going to happen forever.
They were very wise.
Yeah. So they know anything is going to happen 2024, 3056. And by the way, we adjust amendments all the time. And we should. It's an evolving civilization. I'm not coming for your guns. I'm not stopping hunting. I think we can have other conversations. But unfortunately, what happens in a lot of cases, it's get to your side of the argument, lock in there, and don't even listen to the other side at all. One or two more texts. Let's see. They loaded our guns the way our governor loads his gun, everybody would be safe. Yeah, that video didn't work out very well for Tim Walz, did it? It wasn't Dukakis tank-like, right? Because that resonated with so many. I think the folks who didn't like Walz and were dubious of him and probably know hunting a lot better than the two of us were like, what is he really doing, you know? If you treated guns like alcohol or cigarettes, how easily can kids access? More text. They sell these things online. They're so-called non-lethal guns that shoot these plastic projectiles that can incapacitate a person. Sounds like a good alternative to a gun. There are a lot more options now where people have considered that, and I hope people explore and make the smart, responsible decision. Lindsay Gansel was a great producer on this show. She's involved in a lot of aspects of life, including acknowledging her ADHD, interviewing so many people, a part of it. October is ADHD Awareness Month. Our friend Lindsay is next. We used to have a great producer on this show. Now we settle for Dave. Lindsay Gansel produced this show for 74 years. And she is with us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? I love that my, you know, intro included Adam talking about bratwurst.
Yes.
It's just like nothing's changed.
Nothing has changed. Exactly. I could go for some Grunhofer's food right now. Grunhofer's.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If you want to send some food, we definitely will sample it. Okay, first of all, most importantly, before we talk ADHD, which is part of your life, and you've turn into part of your professional life also. Let's talk about your health, because we've discussed that multiple times and it's still so much a part of who you are right now. What is the latest?
Well, the latest is my numbers are actually the best they've ever been. So something is working.
Fabulous.
Yes. I am trying to remind myself that even though my numbers are great and I am feeling better, I am still recovering from nearly 2 years of being incredibly sick and having my body attacked. And I did the math this morning in the since March of 2023, since I got sick, 330 doctor's appointments, 24 days in the hospital. I think we're at 8 emergency room trips.
Wow.
So it's been a lifestyle. I'm in a good place mentally, and I actually have applied for a clinical trial that would take us to a clinic either probably in Denver or Jacksonville, Florida for 2 months. And it's the first round. So of course my mother hates that. It's the safety round, but it's very exciting. The results they're seeing are incredible. So fingers crossed that takes place. So we're looking at like January for that.
I know this was not an easy decision, but because you just laid out the hundreds of doctor's visits, the hospital visits, your inability to work, how John had to adjust his schedule, you, with the encouragement, a lot of people started a GoFundMe page. I want you to mention this again. I know you probably don't want, but I want you to mention it for people who hear this story, still care for you. If they want to help out, however small, however big, how can they help out?
Yeah, so I have it linked on my website. If you just go to lindseygensel.com, you'll see it. But you're right. I started a GoFundMe. A dear friend of mine said, you know, we want to help you and we need to know how we can do that. And I haven't worked since February. I mean, I've been doing a lot of work, you know, keeping myself in check into all my appointments, but it's just been very hard finding work that fits in with this kind of lifestyle. So I'm hoping that if I get to the clinical trial and all of that goes well, that, you know, my typical life might return just a little bit more and I'd be able to get back to work. But as of right now, it is not looking that way. So it has been a huge hit. It's been a lot to work through.
Yep.
Yeah. It's been a lot to work through from like an emotional standpoint.
Let's talk ADHD. When did you think you had ADHD? When were you finally diagnosed? And what has the diagnosis done for your life?
Okay, so this is the incredibly funny part, because a big part of having ADHD is impulsivity. But I never had feelings of it. I never had, you know, screenshots or anything like that where I was like, oh, this is definitely me. And it was like I was working up the courage to talk to somebody about it. No, it was literally like one day in January of 2021, I was unemployed because of the pandemic. And I was sitting on my couch and somebody posted a tweet about kids in school who were in the gifted and talented program, basically being a pipeline to undiagnosed adult ADHD. And like this light bulb went off. And like, I'm not joking. Like I had no knowledge of what ADHD was outside of this tweet. Like I really had an outdated idea of what I knew from when I was a kid, which is a young boy who is super hyperactive, who can't sit still and who gets sent out into the hallway. I had no idea. And then this woman posted this tweet and I immediately called my clinic and I said, I'd like to speak to somebody about ADHD. And the woman goes, okay, how about this afternoon? And like, if you know anything about the healthcare system and what it's been like these last few years, especially for people wanting to be diagnosed with ADHD, that's unheard of. And so I went in that afternoon and I spoke to somebody, and from our conversation, she said, I think you should speak to, you know, the clinic psychologist. And I did. And I passed with flying colors, Chad. I tested so well in those ADHD, you know, those ADHD test marks. I did quite well. But, you know, you asked what it's meant for me. My ADHD diagnosis is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And getting medicated for ADHD, going on stimulant medication, which is one of the only tried and true methods for treating attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that's the second best thing, is is getting on medication and realizing just how dysregulated my brain was.
So there are a lot of us who have been around individuals who have ADHD, and you send compassion and empathy, and then we look at pharmaceuticals. We look at meds. And as you laid out in your answer, sometimes they can be amazing, but many times they can have a lot of complications with a lot of side effects. As someone who not only is going through this yourself, but has sat down with people, has talked to dozens and dozens of individuals in formal interviews about ADHD, including my former girlfriend, Carla, who, you know, and Carla was reluctant to acknowledge it for a long, long time. We had, I don't think she would mind. We had a bunch of disagreements about it, and she would get upset when I would say, I think you have this. And I know Carla believes her life is immensely better because of the diagnosis and the medication. I wish her only happiness going forward. But the medication issues, and then sometimes the reluctance to accept this is what you have.
Yeah. Oh, the stigma surrounding ADHD, even if you just take the medication stigma out of the conversation, it is so incredibly hard. And it is still a label people are very hesitant to hold on to. And I was not that way. You know, I had no issue. I think I jumped on social media the second I got my results and shared it. And there are people who don't feel that safety, who don't feel that community. They don't feel that at their workplace. They don't feel that with their family. And that breaks my heart because, like, as I said, like, it's the best thing that has ever happened to me. I have such a better understanding of who I am and who I was, because who I am right now, you know, everything I've gone through in the last 2 years with the chronic illness and the rare disease, you know, I would not have survived that had I not been diagnosed with ADHD 2 years prior and put in the work. And to go off of, you know, what you're talking about, medication is not for everyone. And I have, you mentioned it. I've produced over 150 episodes of my podcast that looks at ADHD. And I would say about 80 of those are interviews, sit-down interviews mm-hmm. with another person who has ADHD. And a lot of them aren't medicated. And a lot of what I'm hearing from, you know, the people that I spoke to, it tends to be people who were diagnosed as children and they were put on medication and it made life worse for them.
Yeah.
And the one thing I will say to that is, we have come so far in the medical system with pharmaceuticals and the development, and you know, things have changed in 20 and 30 years. So the medications we have now, there are so many non-stimulant medications that are doing wonders for ADHD. But I think what's really important is that just like ADHD, it is a spectrum. Even though there's technically right now three types of ADHD, there's, you know, hyperactive, inattentive, and combined type, even those come with just this incredibly wide spectrum. And everyone is going to look different. They're going to have different things they struggle with. And the important thing to remember is that changes over time. So what you might have struggled with 10 years ago is going to be different in 20 years, and it changes. And that can be really hard for people because I think that we like to put people into boxes. We like very defined, mm-hmm. no gray area, very right. black and white. And the one thing I would say is, like, eating has been such a big part of it. Like, I look back at everything I did before I was diagnosed with ADHD, including being your producer, and I masked so much. And what I mean by that is I became exactly who everyone wanted me to be because that was easier than working through the feelings I was having about who I was. And that's really sad. I think a lot of people who are diagnosed as adults deal with a lot of grief. And that's been a big part for me.
Those are such good points. I've learned this a lot, and you know this extraordinarily well, because where does Quentin fit in one box? I mean, this is a long, long story. I won't get into it. But like the other day, we had another doctor's visit, and out of nowhere they suggested, well, he has I don't think it's to the syndrome level, but he also has this. And we're like, well, wait a second, nobody said a word to us. Well, it's
right.
It was in his genetic file. Like, well, shouldn't we know about this? Like, so Q has been, I mean, he was at a doctor today trying to figure out how he can walk better. Like, and okay, with an ADHD diagnosis, like we could line up 10 people and it's not just Adderall here or this. Everybody has shades of gray. And that's why I was heartened to hear that you're going to speak at this conference in Anaheim next month. Okay, so tell people about that.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I'm partnered with two incredible women, Claire Tomey and Jen Hansen. And Jen is actually based here in the Twin Cities. She's a former nurse who is now an ADHD coach. And the three of us are actually talking about the intersectionality of ADHD and chronic illness. And our panel is called Navigating and Managing ADHD and Chronic Illness. And I have been astounded by the research that I'm finding connecting chronic illness and ADHD. And I mean, things like people with ADHD have higher rates of inflammation, and you tie inflammation back to chronic illness and to auto-inflammatory diseases. And it's still very early. Like, it's all, you know, there's so much more that we could learn. But the three of us have all dealt with our own issues with chronic illness, and it is a challenge. You know, like I mentioned, 330 doctor's appointments. Like, I got to tell you this, because this I think you're going to love, Chad, and you're going to be astounded. In your chart, when you go to the doctor, they've got a percentage of the appointments you've missed. I have missed like 3% of appointments. And the most hysterical part is that the one appointment I missed, it was like I had been discharged from the first doctor or the first hospitalization last September, keeping in mind I was there for 18 days. And I missed a chiropractic appointment. And the next time I came in, I was like, did I have an appointment did I miss an appointment? Yeah. And she was like, yeah. And I immediately went into the shame game of like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't believe I missed that. And she looked at me and she goes, I think you're good.
Yeah.
Like, I think you've got enough on your plate. Like, I've moved on. Like, you know, like let's worry about something else. So really excited about that. It's such an honor to been selected. You know, like I mentioned that I've been doing work. I just haven't been working. And so that's been one of the things that I'm really proud of is getting that in and being selected to present. And I can see us, you know, just continuing this on and really diving into this.
Well, I'm elated. I was so pleased to see you at the Rose Bowl, the photos out there. That was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Then to be part of the clinical trial, then to be in a good spot, then to be selected here for this conference. It's good. This is Lindsay Gensel. Lindsay was a part of this show for a long time. She still is a part of this show. She's battling a lot. If you could go to just lindsaygensel.com, if you want to help out with the GoFundMe page, the link is right there. Only love. Say hi to John, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thank you guys so much. Love you, Chad.
All right. Our friend Lindsay Gensel. It's 51 past 1 here on Newstalk. 830-WCCO. That would have been a good on-air conversation.
Yeah, the people instead were treated to Johnny Carson doing a Willie Nelson impression with Willie right
with
there.
With Willie Nelson.
And now Willie's taking
over. Willie's taking over. There's Johnny again. We're going to talk about downtown St. Paul because we talked so much downtown Minneapolis. Liz Fedora from Twin Cities Business Magazine. It's not that optimistic. Melvin Carter is trying to pump it up a little bit, but Liz, with excellent reporting on that. So she's with us at 205. Just briefly, for about 24 hours, it appeared Matthew Stafford might be coming here. Ben Gessling from the Strib is saying nothing to it. The idea was Stafford, the Rams have given up. He's got huge money. They'd take Darnold back. Probably not much more, to be honest, just because the money difference is. And you just go all in. You just say, listen, who thought you could win the Super Bowl? Darnold's been fine, but this guy's better. Gessling is saying it's done. I was intrigued. I was intrigued on the all-in. The third year of his big money concerned me, but I would have done it. For you, didn't seem like you were as excited.
Not really. I'm not sold that Matthew Stafford is still the Matthew Stafford we saw even 2 years ago when they were winning the Super Bowl.
It's fair, but also their two stud receivers have been gone and their offensive line's a shell of itself. Maybe it still happens. We'll see. Linus Construction Time Check. It's time for me to stop talking. It's time to get free installation labor on Minnesota-made Infinity from Arva Windows.
Could you talk for another 10 seconds, though?
Oh, is that why? Did you give me a sheet?
I told you were paying attention to something.
I was listening to Willie Nelson.
You know what? Listen to the podcast, too. Chad Hartman Show. Find it.
Find it now. I'll stop talking.